We are Radio Catskill.
I say you.
As we honor and pay tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., many Black American parents are taking this opportunity to educate their children and have The Talk, a conversation about racism, discrimination, and the richness of Black culture.
It was the response to what my son was seeing on the news.
We are thugs. We are animals. Look at these protesters. Like, no, we are not. Look at what our ancestors have done.
I'm Eddie Robinson, and stay tuned as we chat unguarded with New York Times bestselling author Tammy Charles. We'll explore the inspiration behind her famed children's books that celebrate Black men and women of the past. Plus, we'll learn more about her remarkable journey, from working as a school teacher in New Jersey to earning success as an acclaimed writer. Oh yeah, I feel you. We hear you. I see you. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President-elect Trump takes the oath of office in 2 hours at the U.S. Capitol. Last hour, Trump, Vice President-elect J.D. Vance, and their families attended a service at St. John's Episcopal Church close to the White House. The church service is a nearly century-old tradition for incoming presidents. Later today, Trump is expected to sign several executive orders. One is going to say that it's U.S. policy to recognize two biologically distinct sexes, male and female. This order can affect documents such as passports, visas, and employee records. A second order will end all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the federal government. An incoming White House official says Trump is going to sign an executive order declaring a national emergency. That's intended to cut regulations for the energy industry. The order is supposed to end the, quote, electric vehicle mandate. Trump is also going to declare a national emergency at the U.S. border. He is expected to take several actions around this. These include efforts to suspend refugee resettlement in the U.S. for 4 months. It also calls for restoring the death penalty for people in the U.S. illegally who kill a law enforcement officer. Trump will also seek to end a constitutional amendment known as birthright citizenship. This last action is expected to see an immediate legal challenge. Supporters of President-elect Trump are preparing to celebrate his inauguration. NPR's Sarah McCammon reports some traveled hundreds of miles for the event they hoped to witness, only to find that it was moved indoors because of cold weather.
Michael Webb and Jonathan Mahoney were excited for the inauguration, but they're rolling with the change of plans.
I got moved inside, so it's kind of sad.
Yeah, we had tickets too, so we were like on the lawn, and then we don't know what's going on with that now.
Webb, who's from Texas, and Mahoney from Massachusetts, are in the military and stationed together a few hours from D.C. Edwin Alas traveled from Colorado with his husband, Gabriel. Alas says they don't have tickets, but they wanted to come celebrate the new president.
You want the best for him, because a successful presidency, no matter what party, is a successful country. So we hope the same for President Trump.
Trump will take the oath inside the Capitol Rotunda, with many supporters watching from a downtown arena. Sarah McCammon, NPR News, Washington.
Meanwhile, this morning, President Biden has issued several pardons. He says these are meant to protect certain Americans from politically motivated prosecutions. The pardons are for former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley, the former pandemic medical advisor to the White House, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and pardons for lawmakers on the House January 6th committee and their staff. You're listening to NPR. The National Weather Service has issued warnings of extreme cold in the central U.S. from the Canadian border down to South Texas. At the same time, a winter storm is brewing on the Gulf Coast. Heavy snow, sleet, and freezing rain are headed for Texas, Georgia, and Florida. Forecasters say these areas don't often get this kind of winter weather. Canada's internal trade minister says if President-elect Trump follows through on his threat of tariffs, Canada could retaliate with the single largest trade blow to the U.S. Dan Karpinchuk reports Anita Anand says Canada is ready to take on Trump immediately.
Anand says retaliatory measures are ready and will be unveiled on Monday when and if Trump slaps a 25% tariff on Canadian products. She's echoed what other cabinet ministers and nearly all provincial premiers have said, that Canada will use all the tools it has to ensure that Canadian workers and industry are protected. Trump has praised the use of tariffs, but economic experts are warning that his threat would have devastating effects on both economies, especially if there is a trade war, the biggest between Canada and the U.S. in decades. Anand also acknowledges that Ottawa still does not have any information about what Trump will do, but she says Canada has planned multiple rounds of counter-tariffs, which it will not hesitate to use. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
California firefighters are making progress against the two enormous wildfires burning around Los Angeles, but powerful Santa Ana winds that have helped fuel the flames are returning today. Forecasters have issued a red flag warning. The winds are expected to last through Thursday. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream.
You're listening to ICU. I'm Eddie Robinson. She's a New York Times bestselling author of numerous books for young readers, including the picture book All Because You Matter. Her latest book, We Are Here, is being promoted as a follow-up to All Because You Matter, but still considered a standalone book. We Are Here celebrates the rich history of Black and Brown men and women and pays tribute to those individuals who've made momentous contributions from the beginning of time, reminding young readers and children of their roots, their background, their heritage, and inviting them to imagine a future that shines even brighter, stressing to them that they're brilliant, that they're extraordinary, and far beyond ordinary. And it's an especially poignant piece during our recognition of key heroes like the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and how we here at ICU look to encourage those who are listening to take a moment, if you haven't done so already, to consider having those conversations with your own children now during what I like to call these soul holidays, such as MLK Day, and having the talk, if you will, with your son or your daughter or a loved one or a young family member. And who better to have on our show to help us navigate those conversations of the talk and having the talk is a former teacher herself and now full-time author and best-selling author, Tammy Charles. Tammy, thank you so much for being a guest on ICU.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, the book you wrote entitled All Because You Matter did really well and became a New York Times bestseller. You know, tell us more about the inspiration behind the creation of that book, All Because You Matter, and how your latest book, We Are Here, how they're connected.
Okay, so I'm a mom, and like you said, the talk.
Yeah.
I just didn't expect to have the talk when he was in kindergarten.
Wow. You know? Interesting.
So when my son Christopher was in kindergarten, he learned about Dr. King. His teacher did an incredible job teaching about Dr. King's legacy. But the one thing that my son could not wrap his head around was, if Dr. King was such a good guy who wanted all these wonderful things for everyone, people of all backgrounds, Mommy, why did the bad guys hurt him?
Shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, that was a lot. When he asked that question, I said, oh God, here we go, you know? It was at that moment that I knew, oh boy, this is the start of these tough yet very important conversations I know I'll need to have with my son. So I wrote All Because You Matter because I wanted to have a starting point for conversations like that. I wanted to write something that would remind my son that there's a place for him in this world, an affirmation of worth, a reminder that he matters. Now, yes, I wrote it for him, but then this beautiful thing happened where that message kind of blossomed into a very much needed message for other children like him, children of color, black children, children from marginalized backgrounds, but essentially all children, because what child doesn't want to hear that they matter? So that book published in 2020, and here comes my son again, older, wiser. He saw some things on the news. He read some headlines. He saw George Floyd. Mommy, who is that? Why are they doing that to him? He saw social media accounts where people criticized peaceful protesters, but yet called them animals and thugs. Mommy, why are they calling them that? They're not doing anything wrong. And just when I thought I was done, I said all I needed to say and all because you matter, I realized I wasn't done. That now I needed to add to that story. It also made me think, these conversations made me think of the child that I lost a few years ago. Had my daughter come to me with those same questions as my son, what would I have said to her? Well, that's when it clicked. To change that narrative, to shift the narrative away from animals and thugs and the terrible act against George Floyd and what we were seeing in the media, I would have told her about her legacy, which I did with my son. So I said, well, let me switch things around. And now let me talk about the history. Because when someone calls you an animal or a thug, you need to have the evidence as to why you are not. So that's where We Are Here came from. That's the inspiration, just really stemming from conversations with my baby.
Yeah. And those conversations, I mean, they're tough, right? I mean, here I am, a new dad.
You know? Oh, congratulations. Yes. What do you have?
I have a son. He's now 16 months old. And, you know, but being gay, that's pretty intense, you know, and
it is intense, but hey, there's there's ways, and you found a way. So yes, kudos to you. Congrats.
Yes. And thank you so much. And it's been a very, very intense journey because, you know, it's difficult for me to locate books or even media driven content for my child. He's black, but he's also a mixed race with Polish, Irish, and French background. And I'm trying to figure out how can I just ask this without being intense, but you know, as far as skin color, because I noticed that he's starting to notice those kinds of things.
Okay.
And I do find it pretty challenging to locate books about this kind of aspect and that representation. But have you run into instances or incidents through talking with parents about how to navigate the talk through that world of skin and skin complexions and skin color and how that might affect children at an early age?
So that's quite the question.
Finally, yeah.
You got it all out. First, I'm going to say, you say he's 16 months now. You're going to blink and he's going to be 16.
Years.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Okay.
The other thing that I'll say is this. I can think of one instance, a recent instance, where I was in Salt Lake City. Well, on the outskirts of Salt Lake City. And I was the only brown face at this event. But I want to preface by saying it was an event for teachers and librarians. I was a keynote speaker. They were lovely. And I mean that genuinely. So yeah, I was the only brown face, but I wasn't like made to feel that way per se. And the food was rocking too. Let me just add that. The food was really good. They treated me like royalty, but there was one teacher who kind of pulled me to the side And she had this look of, like hope slash appreciation, but like with a little bit of tears, you know? And she told me how, she goes, I don't know if you've noticed, but we're a very white state. And I was like, you don't say.
Right, right.
That was the only time where it was like pointed out, you know?
Correct.
But she goes, with that said, I have to tell you about an incident that happened in my classroom. She had a black student and a white student. And the white student said a slur to her one black student in the whole class, because this particular part of Utah was not diverse at all. She did something interesting. She took All Because You Matter and she gave that book to the white student. And I didn't understand what she was saying at the time. I thought she gave it to her black student to go, oh, go home and read this. This book will make you feel like you matter, you know?
Sure.
That's not what she did. She gave the book to the white student and told the white student to read it with his family so that they can have conversations built around what he said. And the very next day, this kid came to school with the book and a brand new understanding of the power of his words. Those two boys are best friends now. He apologized. He empathized. And now they're best friends. But to really instill that level of empathy and respect now, I think that's the way forward. That's the stuff that keeps me writing.
You're listening to ICU. I'm Eddie Robinson, and we're speaking with former Jersey school teacher and now New York Times bestselling author Tammy Charles. Her latest book, We Are Here, celebrates the rich history of black and brown men and women and pays tribute to those individuals, especially remarkable leaders like the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who've made extraordinary contributions from the past. Tammy, why do you think it's so important to teach children about our legacy and how it's important to teach children now more than ever?
Yeah, teach them now. Get them while they're young. I don't know about you, but for me growing up, I didn't see a lot of books that featured kids of color being the heroes of their own stories. You know, kids just being kids, doing ordinary and extraordinary things. In fact, a little not so fun fact for you, in 1986, 3,000 children's books were published that year. Only 18 of them were written by black authors or authors of color featuring our kids. That's 0.6%. The representation is, or the lack thereof, is jarring. So when you look at figures like that and you fast forward to one of our most recent figures, is we've gone from 0.6% of representation to now it's at, I think the last study that was done is 11%. Okay, it's a little better. It's not great, but it's gotten better. All right. But this is why representation matters. Yes, that representation is for us. And selfishly, it's for 12-year-old me who would have loved to see more books like this on the shelves. But let's normalize that now for children now. If they grow up now with diversity being normalized and learning about other people through the pages of a book, I definitely think that's the way that we just have a more unified society. But let's do it now. Let's not wait until they're adults and stubborn.
Yeah, that's right. And how do you believe representation in children's books, how does that affect young readers that you notice as a result of your journey?
Well, I think if young readers, any young reader, if they're reading one single storyline, that doesn't really reflect a culture. A lot of people think that, you know, maybe we're a monolith. We're not a monolith.
we have very, you know, varied and authentic lived experiences, as authentic as theirs from their culture. So if they get to have these broad stories, guess what? We should have that too. I wrote a book about the first Black woman to work for the United States Post Office, and she was one of the early settlers of the West. She did that when first of all, it was not a job for women, so there's that. And then to be a Black woman, there's that. But then also to be an ex-slave, to literally settle the West. These are these hidden histories that I feel like all kids could benefit from that. Wow, look at all of these stumbling blocks that could have prevented her. Her name is Mary Fields, from pursuing this as a career, and she did it anyway. Why? Because that's legacy, that's determination. There's no color that you can attach to that. It's just strength. And that's something that any kid could pick up and be inspired by.
As a former New Jersey school teacher, what was it like making that transition, you know, from educator to author? You know, what happened that triggered that particular decision?
So I wanted to be an author when I was a kid. But here we go again.
Yeah.
Representation. How could I be something that I wasn't seeing, right? So I did the next best thing and I became a teacher. It's literally in my DNA. My mom was the teacher at my school. Then she became the vice principal at my school and then the principal. Hello.
Nice. Wow.
So it was like, I was destined to be a teacher. I put the author dream in my back pocket because, like, that wasn't even an option. But when I became a teacher, I learned about contemporary authors like Kwame Alexander and, Karen Parsons, she's a friend of mine, and Meg Medina, Jacqueline Woodson. And I'm like, whoa, where were these books when I was a kid? So I was reading these books with my students, seeing the spark in their eyes and how normalized it was for them to read these kind of books. So I shared with them my childhood dream, and they were like, oh, Miss Charles, you have to try to, you know, reach that dream. So they pushed me, and here I am.
Coming up, more of our conversation with acclaimed author Tammy Charles and her journey from being a teacher to a New York Times best-selling writer of children's books. And did you know that she was part of an R&B singing group? Why has she been so guarded about revealing details about that group? I'm Eddie Robinson. A captivating second segment of ICU happens in just a moment.
In 2017, President Trump took office with an inaugural address that spoke of American carnage. In 2021, President Biden took office calling to lower the temperature and the raging fires of politics. In 2025, Trump takes office a second time. What does he say? We'll hear it. I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us for live special coverage of Inauguration Day from NPR News.
Live special coverage starts this morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Psychologist Ken Sheldon tried to make it as a musician in his 20s.
I remember walking in the rain, it was Seattle, wondering what to do next, and coming to the decision that this is probably not going to give me a way to make a living, and that I needed to get serious about maybe something else.
How to figure out what you want, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to ICU. I'm Eddie Robinson, and we're speaking with former Jersey school teacher and now author Tammy Charles. Her latest book, We Are Here, with the help of illustrator Brian Collier, celebrates the rich history of Black and brown heritage and community. The book is a follow-up to her New York Times bestselling picture book, All Because You Matter. It's an inspirational tribute to all of the Black men and women throughout history who've made momentous contributions from the beginning of time. Tammy, give us some more insight as to, you know, what it was like growing up in Newark and how books, you know, played a huge role for you growing up. And again, please shed also some light on what, from what my producer tells me, you were part of an R&B singing group. What was up with that?
No, he did not.
Yes, yes. What is going on there? What was the name of the group? What was the song that became a one-hit wonder? And have you been in touch with other members of the group? Go!
That was like 20 questions in one. I'm going to start with the Newark question. So I was born... You're funny. I was born in Newark. A large part of my family are from Newark. I was educated in Newark. My mom, as I said, was the teacher at my school. Growing up in Newark was awesome. You know, I had great teachers, many of whom I'm still in contact with to this day. I had a great experience in Newark. Great summers. I remember us busting open the fire hydrants because we didn't have pools, you know? We didn't have pools and white picket fences and convertibles driving off into the sunset, but it was a good life.
There you go.
You know, if I was poor, I didn't know it. I tell you that much because my parents worked very hard to give me a good life. So growing up in Newark was great. When I was 8, though, my parents moved me out of Newark, but kept me in Newark schools. So I moved about a half hour away to a town called Roselle. So it was kind of suburban, but I kept my urban roots by still going to school in Newark. I loved it. Now, does that answer the Newark question? Now I got to answer the singing group question. I was hoping that you'd forget about that. We could go to another.
I'm a music man, and you know I've got to find out what happened there. Okay. And there was and you also have a book, right? You know,
yes.
What was the name of the book?
Called Muted.
Yeah, Muted. Yes, exactly.
That's another book with Scholastic that I published during the pandemic. So let me just say this. My answer is I'm going to give you the tea.
Oh, here we go.
But it's going to be a little guarded. I have to because I have to protect them, my girls, them meaning the girls that I was in the group with. So let's just say this. I was in this singing group before YouTube, before American Idol, and before Instagram. So you're not going to find me.
Laura Walker, bless her beautiful heart as our producer. We're both going crazy on the internet. Where is this group? Was it Jade? Lady So?
It wasn't Jade. No. So let me just say this.
Nice.
No, we can't. We had so many failed production and record deals. We never. I need to get the record straight. We never produced a full album.
Got it. Okay.
We had one song on the radio.
Which was the song? What was the song?
Okay. So do you remember Nas and Genuine had a song called Owe Me Back?
Yes. Shorty, what you like? Where's the second half? Fill up my eyes.
Yes.
So I don't know the lyrics.
Me neither.
As you can tell.
My singing group did the callback of that song, and it played on New York radio.
Got it.
So like East Coast, it wasn't like this hit. And then we had a music video. It played on BET at like 4 in the morning when everyone was sleeping. You know, it's just one of those one-time things. Did we get a chance to hear it on the radio while we were driving down the highway? Yes. Did we celebrate that? Yes. But did we ever make it to the top like Destiny's Child? Who came to our school, by the way?
Oh.
It came. Destiny's Child performed at our school with Jagged Edge. And that was right around the time where we were trying to come out as well.
And I bet you passed out. What happened?
Oh, my
there?
God. I passed out. Of course. We were so excited.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, in the 90s, it was like...
That's right.
The market was so saturated with black girl groups.
Yes.
So So, like, where were we going to fit in? So it was hard. It was fun. It was a tie. And I'm never doing it again.
It's ICU. I'm Eddie Robinson, and we're speaking with New York Times bestselling author Tammy Charles. Her children's books, All Because You Matter and We Are Here, celebrate the likes of Martin Luther King Jr. and Marian Anderson. The books honor the rich history of black and brown women and men with amazing illustrations and inspired language. Tammy, what happened in your life that really gave you the determination that you needed to motivate yourself to make a living out of becoming a children's book author, right? I mean, there's something that had to have happened in your life that just really just said, you know what, this is, I got to do this.
So I was scared. I was very, very scared to leave teaching. I'm grateful that I can do this work and still somewhat be a teacher because I do lots of school visits. I've visited schools all across the country and abroad where I get to share my love of writing and reading with kids. And that's all I want to do. Like, that's my purpose in life. I discovered it late, but I'm so happy I discovered it. But I have to tell you, if I had to pick one person who, outside of my students, because my students definitely encouraged me, but the one who was like, you got to do this, was my husband. He was pushing me. He's like, leave teaching. I got you. You need to give this a shot because what are you going to do? Wait until you retire at 65 when you should be chilling? And so I'm like, okay, I didn't do it at first though. It's hard to walk away from 14 years of family. Those kids were my kids. They were my children. Now they themselves have kids and husbands and wives, and it's also strange. It took me 5 book deals to finally have the courage to walk away and have the belief that I could do something with this writing thing.
And that sounds like rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. Yeah. And then finally you had that moment where the doors opened up for you.
Oh,
and
yes.
Things really sort of brightened up in terms of this is really what you should be doing.
That's exactly what happened. When I went to college, I thought I wanted to be a news reporter. Now, of course, I wanted my singing group to make it, you know? But after trying and getting rejected, like you said, then I said, oh, maybe I'll try my hand at news reporting. And then that didn't work out. And my mom said, when I graduated from college, I'm going to give you 1 year to figure out your life. So, and then you got to do something. So, AKA, you don't have to pay me anything. You can live in this house for a year, but do something with your life. So I said, you know what? Let me just try substitute teaching because in this way, you know, I could go to work when I want. If I can't make it, I won't be penalized and I could get a little money in my pocket. I did that. And Eddie, oh my God, I was hooked from day one. These daggone kids. I said, oh wow, I really like this. And next thing you know, they were offering me a permanent position. I had to take it because I loved it. I loved it. And that's how I got trapped for 14 years.
I'm wondering if you can share with us some stories or narratives about the obstacles that you've experienced as a black children's book author and, you know, what the road was like there, in trying to write these stories for children of color.
So lots of obstacles. I gave you the numbers don't lie. I mean, we're at That's maybe right. 11% still in current times.
Interesting.
Obstacles. I got lots of rejections in the beginning when I was even just trying to find an agent. But I will say this. Yeah. I'm going to take a little bit of ownership for that because my early stories, I found myself writing about topics and things that meant nothing to me. I think that I was trying to write for the market. I was trying to write the types of stories that, okay, growing up, well, this is what I read and this is what sold. These perfect characters with their perfect homes and white picket fences and convertibles driving off into the sunset. That wasn't
my life. Like, I had a very different type of life, a beautiful one. Once I shifted from trying to write what I thought the industry wanted or what would sell, once I wrote stories that meant something to me and my life, my family, my upbringing, that's when I started to get interest. Now, that doesn't mean that once I got my first yes, there weren't any subsequent no's, because there was. One in particular, I mentioned Mary Fields being the first Black woman to deliver mail, which is a big deal. And kids don't realize, oh, you can just pick up your phone and go on Amazon and your package will be on your door in an hour in some cases. But it wasn't like that in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Like, people had to risk their lives to deliver your mail. And that's what Mary Fields did. When I wrote the story, we tried to sell it and we got a lot of no's. And here's why. Oh, well, we've never heard of her. Oh, we've reached our quota of Black biographies for this year. There's a quota? Wow. that was my reaction was like, wait, no wonder we are only at 11%. Because you guys have quotas. There should be a quota. There's lots of stories of course, I love Dr. King, and I do love those Black history pioneers that we hear about all the time. Dr. Sure. King, Rosa Parks, great. Those are great stories. But we have more. So why not explore that? And what kid can't benefit from learning about a hidden figure that they've never heard about? So, yeah, those are the obstacles that I've dealt with. And sometimes I still deal with them. But I'm just going to keep writing for these babies. Whether, you know, someone will say yes eventually if I push hard enough.
We're chatting with you, Tammy, while many of us, you know, do remember the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And yeah, do you think there will ever come a time where we achieve King's dream of equality for all people? Or do you sometimes feel like, you know, this previous administration in Washington, D.C. possibly derailed the progress that had been made by creating a bigger platform for divisive attitudes and news to take shape and grow even louder? What are your thoughts as relates to King's dream of equality for all people?
I think it's possible. While I won't really talk politics, I will say this. I think that the kids are going to be the ones to do it, not us. As we get older, we get a little set in our ways. That doesn't mean that we can't evolve as humans and that we can't learn from each other. But man, these kids just, and I see it in the school visits that I do. I really think that the kids are going to be the ones to fulfill Dr. King's dream. I think we need to get out of their way a little bit. And if anything, give them books. Take me out of the equation as an author. I'm speaking as a human, a mom, and a former teacher. Let these kids read. Let these kids read books that fit the framework of what Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop wants, where kids should be reading books that are windows, doors, and mirrors, where they see themselves, where they can step into other worlds and learn about other cultures and abilities and backgrounds. The kids are going to be the ones to read these books and realize this is the way towards the future. So yes, I believe in his dream, and I think it's totally possible.
Yeah. And I agree with you with that notion. But look, with children also having access to a lot more information at their fingertips, right?
Oh,
the digital spectrum, you know, and I know you've been going through this in your household.
Yeah.
You know, what advice could you offer up to parents, even me, you know, as it relates to navigating instances of viral racial issues online? Should parents be transparent with their children, or should they shield them from all of this?
That's a tough question, Eddie. And it's funny that you ask, because I've had parents ask me this, and my main goal is, like, as an author, I really don't want to tell parents what to do in their house with their children. Because, hey, listen, I talk about stubbornness. I'm not going to let anyone do that with mine, right?
Exactly.
But I think it's worth listening. I think as adults, we should just focus on the listening to what our kids are thinking. The more we listen and the more we let them talk, we'll get to the heart of the issue. Their hearts, what's in their hearts, what's on their minds. I think it's important that we give advice in a way that lets them develop their own opinion versus us pushing an opinion on them. I want my kid to be an independent thinker, a free thinker, and I'm just a passenger on his journey to guide him where he needs it and to keep him out of certain situations. But I definitely want him to have his own opinion about the world.
Coming up, more with children's book author Tammy Charles. We'll gain some insight behind the title of her latest book, We Are Here, and what we can expect from this acclaimed author in the years to come. I'm Eddie Robinson as we wrap up our final segment of ICU in just a moment. We'll be right back.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, could a new set of rules restore trust to academia?
These are not one-off cases. You have to fix it.
But is academia even capable of changing?
I think that my generation fought against the open science movement for far too long.
The hidden side of academic fraud. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. An episode about the devastating and unprecedented fires in the Los Angeles area, the largest Latino city in the United States. So much lost, so much fear, and also so much rebuilding ahead. That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
It's ICU. I'm Eddie Robinson, and we're speaking with former Jersey school teacher and now New York Times bestselling children's book author, Tammy Charles. She's here to talk to us about her latest book, We Are Here. Ms. Charles, what was the significance of calling the book by this name, We Are Here? I mean, I usually see these three words on a map, you know, telling me where to go, you know, right? You are here. We are here.
So at first, the book was titled We Are. And I titled it We Are because it was the response to what my son was seeing on the news.
Sure.
We are thugs. We are animals. Look at these protesters. Like, no. We are not. Look at what we have done. Look at what our ancestors have done and created that all people get to benefit from. But the Scholastic team came back and they said, you know, we think that this title needs one more word to like really solidify it. And they are the ones who suggested here. And as soon as I said it out loud, we are here, I immediately thought, we are here. We have always been here and we are not going anywhere. Like, so when they added the here, it felt powerful. It felt definite. And in the book, you will see all of the ways that, you know, validates that feeling that we are here. I'm going to show you a little picture here. That is Marian Anderson.
Okay.
And there's Dr. King, which my son loves to, you know, he's still on Dr. King's birthday. He likes to bake a cake and sing happy birthday.
I love that.
But in this spread, I write, our joy is the anthem of life, heard on monument steps, opera stages, stadiums filled with thousands of faces.
We were there for that. Our ancestors, even our current people who are still living right now, they were on those steps listening to Dr. King. That wasn't so long ago.
Yeah, Tammy, and as you're showing us the illustrations, we'll post video clips of what she's describing on our social media, Instagram and Twitter, as well as on our show page. Yeah, Tammy, please share.
So this book, I'm just trying to really lay out all of the ways that we impact the globe. Here is a spread of, it looks like graffiti.
Yep.
But you see a DJ, you see people dancing in the back.
Right.
You see
the word grace.
The word grace. So one of the facts about the book, it's more so for the adults to know, is that the child I lost, I would have named her Grace. So when we talk about, you know, this book coming from conversations with my son, but also making me think of, well, what would I have said to my daughter? Brian took it to the next level and he put her name in graffiti with the illustration. And you'll see there's a pink balloon. I don't know if you could see it.
Yes, yes.
It's that pink balloon is in the very first spread with the family of four. And that pink balloon is Grace.
That's interesting.
And you see that pink balloon follow our main character. You see it follow her all throughout her journey. It's that voice that reminds you, you are not alone. People have come before you and dared to dream so that you could do the very same. But this spread right here says, we are intercontinental, can't you see? With our strut and our style, trendsetters, go-getters, swagger that sweeps across the globe. Now, you know, people around the world are playing our music, wearing our fashions, eating our food and enjoying it. That's joy. That's one of many, many contributions that we have gifted the world. So this is what I mean when I say I wanted to change the narrative. When my son turns on the TV and sees those hateful things. No, that's not us. This is us. This is what we're doing. This is our contribution. And you can do the same.
Not sure if you're open to this, but I'm hoping you are. But just briefly, what happened to Grace? What happened?
I had a long journey with infertility. And I do appreciate this question, and I don't mind answering it. I think fertility is like this silent killer almost. It's just like a tough topic. And if I'm being honest, had you asked me this question about 7 years ago, I probably would not have been able to answer it without just crumbling into a puddle of tears. But I'm past that now. And in fact, I'll say that writing this book was the healing that I did not know that I needed. So I tried my very best to have another child every time that I would get close or actually become pregnant. It was not meant to be. God had other plans for me. So with the last loss in my mind, she had a face, she had a name, she had a gender, and I was showing, I was ready to welcome her, but it just was not meant to be. And losing her happened the day before Thanksgiving, and I actually was hosting. And wouldn't you know, I went about my business like it didn't happen. I pushed it down, covered it up. I had my moment. My husband was there. My son was there. My son was very young and very confused. He didn't know what was happening. All he did was see me crying, which made him cry hysterically. And then my husband was like, you're making him nervous. So I had to push all of that down. Composed myself and went to the turkey. That was every holiday for me for quite a few years.
I didn't really deal with it until recent years. But who knows, you know, maybe my story will help someone. Maybe this book will help a mom. You know, I would love nothing more than to hear from a mom who had fertility issues, but then finally had her beautiful rainbow baby and brought this book for her baby. That would be awesome. I would love that, you know. But in the end, I think that God had a plan for me, and I have the most perfect yet slightly annoying soon-to-be teenager son. He's going to be 13 in a couple weeks. I am freaking out.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a mom of a teenager.
Yay, yay.
That's why I said you're going to blink and your baby is going to be 16 years old. Get ready.
And it's interesting, you know, having the talk, but there's also a moment and a component about the talk of infertility, because it is such a hush-hush sort of intense conversation.
Especially for Black women, because we're supposed to be strong. And
there you go.
There's that. So it's
there you go.
I didn't get a chance. Honestly, I really didn't get a chance to grieve. I didn't get a chance to be vulnerable. I just had to keep going.
Sure.
Because it was Thanksgiving and the family was coming and I needed to finish the turkey and all the thick things. So it was like, there's no time for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know better now though. You know, mental health is another thing that I feel like we don't talk about enough in our community.
In our community. Yes.
You know, again, these are like very adult topics.
Correct.
I write children's books. Yes. But I'd venture to say that my books are for people ages 0 to 99. There's something in there. Hopefully for everyone.
Yes.
A nugget of hope, a nugget of wisdom. Maybe you'll learn something.
Yes.
Maybe you'll go out and write your own story.
That's true. That's true. But with your last two books being connected, All Because You Matter and We Are Here, what's next? What kinds of published material are we to expect from you moving forward? What's going on there?
So when I wrote All Because You Matter, it was like, okay, I said everything I needed to say for my baby boy. It's out in the world. Done. Then the pandemic hit. And then he saw some stuff, as I mentioned. And I said, oh boy, I'm not done. Right?
Right.
So then I wrote We Are Here.
Correct.
But something about writing We Are Here, it still didn't feel complete. When you put together these two books, it says, All Because You Matter, We Are Here. But to make this fully inclusive, where, like you said, what's the way forward? How, you know, do you think Dr. King's dream could be fully realized, which I do? That's when I knew I needed to write something. One more final book. The end of a sentence, the bow on a present, something that really gives us hope that we truly can come together, no matter skin color, no matter our background. So the final book is a proclamation of unity, and it is entitled United Together. When you put all three books together, it'll make a complete statement. All Because You Matter. We are here, united together. So that publishes with Scholastic in 2025.
Such a beautiful nugget. Thank you for
Thank
that. You. That's great. That's great. As a former school teacher from New Jersey and seeing all that's been happening, you know, with societal pressures and social awakenings happening with race and equality front and center through all of this, what would you say to politicians in states like Texas and in states like Mississippi that have chosen to go out of their way to ban inclusive books, to ban, you know, books for people of color, you know,
and they're
what
not
would
even
you say?
Read of these books.
Right.
That's why I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you.
No,
I'm
but
laughing at, I truly feel like some of these people who are like going to bat to ban these books haven't even picked up the book.
Right. They will go out of their way to do it.
Listen, here's what I say.
Yes.
In the face of these book bans.
Yes.
As for me, I'm going to keep writing because our kids need books that fit that framework that Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop preaches. She says books should be mirrors where kids can see themselves, windows where they can look into other worlds, and sliding glass doors where they can actually step into them. When we deny kids access to these types of books, we're denying their humanity. So, no, I don't agree with book bans. I think that children should have access to all types of books that tell authentic stories. Not just trauma stories of Black kids. No. What about Black kids being superheroes? I'd love to read a story about a kid in a wheelchair. Who's the hero of that story? Let's give kids of all types of backgrounds their stories so that they can see themselves and learn from each other. Do not ban books from kids. It denies them their humanity. That's what I would tell politicians.
Last question, which I always ask our guests, of all that you've had to endure, your resilience, your perseverance, your writing, your work as a teacher, your life as a mom, and now a successful author, what's been the biggest lesson that you've learned about yourself thus far?
Oh, this is a question. My biggest lesson I've learned about myself. I'm still working on this, okay? Jesus is still working on me.
Work in progress.
It's okay to ask for help. I'm my own worst enemy. I need to do better. I'm trying to do better. I have learned that no one is a superhero in the sense that I can do all of these things all the time. It's okay to ask for help, because typically when you do ask for help, you're also helping that person. So someone who is helping you, it's like you're spreading light and joy. So when I ask for help, they're getting something twofold, threefold. And it's okay to ask. It's okay to be a blessing to others and for them to be a blessing to you. I'm still working on it, but I'm getting better at it.
I needed this.
Me too. And I made it. See? Yeah. I'm about to clap for myself, because look, you asked me a question that if you had asked me that 6 years ago, I would have just closed the computer. Come back.
Yeah.
But I made it.
Former New Jersey school teacher and now New York Times bestselling author, Tammy Charles. Her latest book, children's book, We Are Here, celebrates the rich history of Black and brown men and women, and pays tribute to those individuals, especially remarkable leaders like the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Tammy, thank you so much for being a guest on ICU.
Thank you.
Our team includes technical director Todd Holzlander, producer Laurel Walker, editors Mark DiClaudio and John Mitchell Good. ICU is a production of Houston Public Media. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen and download your favorite shows. I'm your host and executive producer, Eddie Robinson. And I feel you. We hear you. I see you. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.
Support comes from Morgan Outdoors, local headquarters for outdoor lovers, Main Street Hurleyville, near the rail trail. From books, maps, and children's gifts to footwear, gear, and expertise, morgan-outdoors.com.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got Stereo Overstimulation by the Three Sons and Les Baxter's Quiet Village, done Dixieland style. Who picks this music? I'm Darryl Brogdon. The music's always shaken, not stirred. on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, you're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Next, we'll take you to Washington for NPR News special coverage of President-elect Donald Trump being sworn in as the nation's 47th president in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. Today's weather, it's the start of a prolonged cold wave. Today, a high of 17. Tonight, there's a cold weather advisory in effect from midnight tonight till noon on Wednesday. Very cold wind chills of 15 to 20 below expected throughout central New York and northeast Pennsylvania. The dangerously cold wind chills as low as 20 below could cause frostbite in as little as 30 minutes. Tomorrow, it's going to still be cold, and we get to warm up on Thursday to 25.